Hello and welcome to the Bookshelf Conversation, the podcast segment of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews with authors, artists, musicians, filmmakers, anyone who has anything to do with baseball and pop culture, because that's our slogan, if it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. I had the enormous good fortune to catch Claire Smith, the newest recipient of the J.G. Taylor Spink Award, at the recent Society for American Baseball Research Convention in New York. Smith was the first African-American female reporter to cover baseball for a newspaper as a staffer for the Hartford Courant in 1983. She later became a columnist of the New York Times and an editor in columns for the Philadelphia Inquirer. She is currently an editor for ESPN. As an African-American and a woman, she is truly a pioneer on many fronts, enduring uncomfortable situations as she began her career dealing with the knuckleheads in the locker rooms who objected to her presence. So it's only proper that the news was carried by more than just the sports media, such as a segment of the PBS NewsHour and an item from the Povich Center, named in honor of the legendary Washington Post columnist Shirley Povich, who, if you don't know, is not actually a female. In addition to her newspaper work, Smith co-wrote Nothing But the Truth, The Baseball Life by Don Baylor, which was published in 1989. Enjoy the conversation. So we're at Sabre 47 in New York City, and I have the honor of speaking with the latest Spink Award winner of the Hall of Fame, Claire Smith. Claire, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thanks for having me here, Ron. Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Now, I had to do it a little differently because I usually do this on the phone where it's fairly quiet, so the microphone's going to be doing a little passing back and forth, but you spoke at a session with Jean Aftermath?
After me.
About her position with the New York Yankees. And I have to admit, I was a little disappointed because I was hoping you were the one who was going to be interviewed. So I'm glad I had this opportunity to do that. So first of all, congratulations.
A lot
of people know about the ballplayers who are elected and the process for that. Could you tell us what is the process for consideration for the Spink Award?
Well, the process it takes a couple years, and it starts in the individual chapters. There are 25 chapters that represent the 30 teams. The New York chapter is made up, obviously, of writers who cover the Mets and the Yankees. Obviously, the Southern Cal chapter consists of the Dodgers and the Angels. San Diego has its own chapter, so on and so forth. That's why there are fewer chapters than there are teams. Each chapter has the option each year of nominating a writer that it considers worthy of the J.G. Taylor Spink Award. That award is given to a writer that the national body considers having given a contribution that it mirrors what Mr. Spink did in the name of journalism, and that is contribute in a way that made a terrific mark on journalism and a terrific mark on the coverage of Major League Baseball. So each year, each chapter can make that nomination or not and forward its nominee's name to a committee, a national committee that's made up of prior Spink Award winners. That committee gathers the nominees and makes its own determination, boils the number down to three. It passes the three nominees, if it has three nominees, it wants to pass on to the national body of BBWAA members. And those members have about a half a year to consider and then if the national body, I'm getting a little confused here, the national body at the All-Star Game will vote on the number that is forwarded by the committee and decide if there are three names they want to put on an official ballot. I ended up on the ballot at the All-Star Game last year in San Diego with wonderful writers, two wonderful writers and peers and dear friends. That ballot does not go out to the national body of Baseball Writers Association of America, until after the World Series. And then the ballots are to be mailed back and tabulated. The announcement is always made at the winter meetings, which is usually the first week of December. And in the first week of December, that is when I found out at the annual meeting of the Baseball Writers Association of America, at the winter meetings, it was announced that I had won, and I became 68th winner of the Spink Award. There were about 100 writers in the room, in the meeting, when it was announced, and one of them almost passed out from being honored by her peers.
So you were in attendance when the announcement was made?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I was. I was on site because I work for ESPN, and BBTN Baseball Tonight was on site. So I tried to go to as many winter meetings as I can. We cover the winter meetings. And I am a baseball writer and a member in good standing, gold card member, lifetime member of the Baseball Writers Association. So I go to as many meetings as I can, and I was urged to go because my name, I had a 1 in 3 chance of having my name called. So Juan Vinay was also a candidate, a terrific, terrific writer who's known all over Latin America. He is the voice and also the great, maybe the greatest writer in our time to represent baseball throughout Latin America. And Jim Reeves, who is just a dynamic, funny, witty, terrific writer in Texas, biggest Texas, one of the best people I've ever met, one of the best writers I've ever read. They were my partners and on the ballot, and any one of us would have been as worthy as the other. So I was privileged to be on that ballot.
Now, this is not a secret ballot, is it? You knew about this ahead of time?
Yes, because I was able to vote as well. I received the ballot. The ballot goes out to all the writers, and the discussion is on. It's on from the World Series till the announcement is made at the winter meetings. The ballot is very much public, and the writers can discuss it. It's all over Twitter. It's all over Facebook. It's all over Instagram and all the other avenues that I'm not familiar with.
So this is a longer process than voting for a player. The process itself is longer than voting for a player.
Yes, and it's less contentious. The public is not involved. The public does not have a say. I believe there's a public element in the Fort C. Frick Award, which is the award given to broadcasters, but in the writers category, it's all writers. It's 100% vote belonging to the writers. That makes it very special to me because it's your peers. It's your peers making the decision. And the fact that so many Spink Award winners are marking those ballots, it just touched my heart. It really did. So many of them made their opinions known through Twitter and Facebook and in conversations with me. I did a lot of crying when the announcement was made. I cry a lot commercials and when I see puppies and things like that.
Now, I always ask this of writers who've been at their trade for a long time, the base artists. What's your number?
I don't have a number anymore, because when you stop covering in terms of a beat, they give you a lifetime gold card. So,
what was your number when you had it?
I was down in the low 200s. I don't remember the exact number, but I wasn't. It's not. You don't want to get to number one. That's not. That's. This is the one time you don't want to be number one.
Now, one of the things you discussed in your presentation was that Jean was a pioneer. She's a first assistant GM. You're a pioneer.
Right. Gene is one of the first three.
But you're a pioneer in your own right.
Well, I don't pretend to be the first. I wasn't the first. I can say that among Spink Award winners, I'm the first woman. I think that's because most women had better imaginations, and they didn't. They covered baseball, and then they said, well, let me go try this or that. I did this for 35 years, and I still haven't had enough imagination to think that maybe something else would be as interesting. So I stuck around for 35 years.
But on the other hand, you had the determination to. It must have been very tough, especially at the beginning.
Well, there were moments, but I will never, ever pretend or suggest that I had it as tough as some of my other peers. There are women who had really, really, really bad weeks, bad years, really hostile environments to work in. I had one bad day in 35 years. That one day resulted in a change that really resonated through baseball, and I'm proud of that. It took a toll on me, but it did lead to some change. It was very good.
Would you mind elaborating on that, or you
don't? Well, 1984 postseason playoffs, Padres at Cubs in Wrigley Field. We had assurances that as a Yankee writer for the Hartford Courant, I could switch over to the National League and cover postseason. We covered two teams, the Red Sox and the Yankees, but our Red Sox writer went AL, I went NL. The National League assured us that in the postseason the clubhouses belong to the league. I would not have a problem. The reason we had that in writing was that we knew that the Padres had not allowed women in the clubhouses, and we knew we would be covering the Padres. So we had assurances that the National League rules would rule. So first game in Wrigley Field, the Padres lost, I believe, and I have to get the story, both sides. And so I go to the clubhouse, and there were no other women. I was the only one in a large group of reporters, but some players honed in on me and started shouting and yelling, and clubhouse people descended on me and started basically herding me out of the clubhouse. The general manager said that it was Dick Williams's clubhouse and he didn't allow women. And there was, as I said, the National League said, it's their clubhouse. No, it's Dick Williams's clubhouse. Didn't allow women. One of the clubhouse attendants in a Padres t-shirt or polo shirt actually put his hands on my back and started pushing me towards the door. And out the door I went as Dick Williams was making his way in, I guess, from the interview room. And I said, I am allowed in your clubhouse but by the National League rules, but they say that I'm not allowed in the clubhouse by the Padres rules, your rules. And he said, that's right. And he kept walking. So out I went. And as I stood in the hallway trying to figure out how I'm going to do my job for my paper, Henry Hecht of the New York Post comes barreling towards the clubhouse. And, he, you know, Henry sizes up the situation immediately and says, what do you need? He said, I need quotes. What do you want me to do? And I said, tell Steve Garvey. And he said, okay. And he goes. Now, the way it was described to me later, Steve, who, as usual, is in the middle of the clubhouse talking to a large group of reporters, because that's what Steve does after a loss. He is always available while some other players are hiding. But he's got it. He's got the reporters back, and he's available. And so Henry kind of makes his way to Steve's side, and he tells him that I've been thrown out and I need quotes. And Steve immediately excuses himself and comes out to the hallway. I've known Steve since I was a fan in Philadelphia. I was a Dodger fan, so I've known him for a long time. He comes out in the hallway, and I see him, and I start crumbling, if you will. I start getting emotional. And Steve said, I'll stay here as long as you need, but you have a job to do. And with that, I pulled myself together, and I asked him questions, and he answered, and I had what I needed, and I went over to the Cubs to finish my job. It was funny, by the time I got there, somehow the Cubs had heard what had happened, and Cubs that I had covered when with the Yankees, they were furious. They were so angry that that had happened in their house. George Frazier, Don Zimmer, folks like that, they were furious. Actually had to sort of calm them down. Next day, I'm on the field, actually standing as far away from the Padres dugout as I can, because this had become kind of a sensational story, as you can imagine. The media, the national media, had picked up on it. My paper, my editor had gone crazy. The National League was doing its best to clean up a mess. And Peter Ueberroth, who'd been on a job literally less than a week as commissioner, was also being dragged into a situation he was very much unaware of. So I'm on the field, and I see Goose Gossage, who was then with San Diego, the person I covered with the Yankees. He's barreling towards me through batting practice, through the infield, barreling towards me. He's coming at me, and he's yelling at me, pointing his finger. Why didn't you come get me? Why didn't you come get me? You're in there today. You're in there today. And this Peter Ueberroth had already acted. He had declared that all clubhouses were open to properly credentialed media from that point on. No club could do what the Padres did anymore. But Goose was going crazy. And he's just in my face. You're in there.
I can tell even now you seem affected by the memories of this.
Yes. It's like yesterday. And I said, why didn't you come get me? I said, I knew why I didn't, because you don't want to be the story. And if I had come to get Goose, I know what he would have done. There would have been broken bodies in there. There would have been. I know Steve, he reacted the way... I know he would have reacted the way he did, but I know Goose would have reacted in a very volatile way, and it would have been a huge story, and it would have been a disaster. And I love him for his passion, but I didn't want him to be a story. I didn't want Steve to be a story. I didn't want to be a story. I wanted to do my job. That's all I wanted to do. Was my job.
And speaking of jobs, one of the things you said toward the end of the presentation was the change in print journalism these days, and how that poses a challenge to future journalists. So if we could just finish up with your thoughts on that.
Yes. There is a strange... how do you describe it? The industry has a conundrum. I truly believe that its push to diversify comes from a lot of good hearts and good minds. I believe that this industry loves to look at issues through different lenses now. Gender, through eyes, people of color, all colors, all genders, races, religions, different sexual identities, so on and so forth. Okay, they've got that. It's not 1950. It's not Mad Men. But now they also have to deal with shrinking industries. These industries are... I just read that the New York Times is going from 300 news editors down to 50? Okay? And people have to justify why they should be among the 50. There have been layoffs that are undoing a lot of the hires that improve diversity, because men and women, people of color, including the color white, Caucasian, black, Hispanic, everybody, it's across the rainbow, everybody's taking the hit. So how do you go then into college and see the rainbow of young faces and say, go get them? Go get what? So you have to tell the kids, keep learning and the art and the craft, but prepare to be inventive. If you want this, you're probably going to have to be a part of a generation that reinvents it. Because as you see, our generation has tried to reinvent it, and we're not doing very well. So come at us with a Bill Gates-type attitude. You're going to have to reinvent the delivery systems of the future and modify them, figure out how to make money off of them, and catch the eye of the public, because the eyes have drifted away. Okay. So you want them to stay energized and enthusiastic, because you feel it in the rooms when you go to the colleges. You don't want to go in there and say, what the heck are you doing? Why aren't you trying to be on Wall Street or this or that? You want them to stay enthusiastic. You want them to love the written word. You want them to look at the headlines and say, that's a story I could chase. That's a story I want to chase. I want to be Woodward and Bernstein in 2020. I do want to go after that story. Nobody's going to throw me out of the press room. I want to do that. But they also have to want to find a way to deliver it and make sure those pipelines to the public are open, and open wider than they are right now.
Well, Claire Smith, latest Spink Award winner, thank you very much for taking your time. I know you're going to have a great time in Cooperstown getting their award. Thank you so much.
Ron, thank you. Thank you for asking me to do this. I never say no to journalists, and I always feel privileged, and the fact that you wanted to speak with me just blows my mind. So thank you.
It must be odd being on the other side.
It's so weird. You know, one of my favorite sayings that ballplayers use sometimes, you saw it, you write it, it's so weird. We're not supposed to be the story, and it's takes some getting used to. Yes.
Well deserved.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And that was my conversation with Claire Smith, the latest winner of the J.G. Taylor Spink Award for meritorious baseball writing. I think you can tell I was a little bit in awe in the way I handled the conversation and the technology of doing it live. Obviously, I'm more used to doing it as a phone interview. But in any case, congratulations to Claire, a very classy lady. As you may have noticed, I haven't been doing a lot of these conversations lately due to my new job and time constraints that it involves, but I hope to be getting back to it on a regular basis. In the meantime, please visit Ron Kaplan's baseballbookshelf.com for the latest news, reviews, previews, and interviews on your favorite sport. If you have a question or a suggestion, please email me at ronkaplan'sbaseballbookshelf.com. And in the meantime, have a good summer, and I hope to be talking to you soon. So long, everybody. He'd have said, boys, I'm glad I discovered this land.